chapter 23. So, this is a chapter which I think of as David betrayed. Remember we had three times where Shaul was betrayed in a previous chapter. So here we are going to see David betrayed twice in the chapter. It's going to start out with David, and you see the outline on your sheet, with David going to fight the Philistines to save the people of a town called Keilah. David is then going to find out that Shaul is coming to attack him in Keilah, and he is going to escape Shaul. How that works is going to be fascinating. David is going to hide in Midbar Zif, the Zif Desert. Then we're going to get a sudden interlude in which Yehonatan parachutes into our story, and David and Yehonatan have their last conversation. The people of Zif then report David's location to Shaul, and David and Shaul are going to go head to head until word comes in, there's a Philistine attack, and Shaul is called away. So there are multiple narratives going on in this chapter. One, what I already mentioned when we were doing the review questions, the success of Shaul and Doeg's strategy in Nov, in that David loses his protection. Keilah will not protect him from Shaul. Zif will not protect him from Shaul. That's very clear. That's number one. Number two, second narrative, in that little interlude in the middle, David and Yehonatan revisited. Have they learned anything? Has anything changed between them at this point? And then third, the question of Shaul's identity at this point in his life. Is he the enemy of David, or is he the king of Israel? Which is Shaul going to be at this stage? That's a really strong question in this chapter. So we're going to have a lot to talk about in all of this. But first, an overall note. And this, I sort of predicted this when I gave my introduction to the chapter a minute ago, but just to make it more clear and explicit. Shaul has been dealing with people defying him and protecting David for a long time, right? In chapter 18, was when Shaul first became suspicious of David because of the way that women praised David, right? After David killed Goliath in chapter 17, they go out on the Goliath's Head tour, and everybody is singing the praises of David, and it seems like they're praising David more than Shaul. We had that whole discussion. Are they really praising David more or not? Right? That was a discussion we already had. But Shaul at that point is Oyein. He is suspicious of David. And then that explodes in chapter 19 when Yehonatan finds out that Shaul wants to kill David, and he gets his father to swear he's not going to do it. Then he has the house surrounded and Michal lowers David out the window. And then David runs away to Shmuel, and Shmuel hypnotizes, so to speak, Shaul's men, right? Three rounds of agents coming from Shaul and Shaul himself. All of them are captured by their prophecy and they can't harm David. Everybody's defying Shaul until in chapter 20, Shaul explodes at Yehonatan, right? Remember this huge public rebuke? He insults his mother, that whole piece in chapter 20. But now in chapter 21, Shaul has taken a stand. More than just exploding at his son, he demolished a city, and it's effective. And that brings us to the introduction, the opening part of the chapter, David versus the Plishtim, excuse me, in Keilah. This section here, the opening six sentences, are going to show David in apparent ascendancy. He is rising into his position as the king of Israel. He is respected as the protector of Israel. I thought it might be worthwhile, though, if you take a look on the sheet, the second side, I just wanted to set the stage here geographically. I thought it was worth taking a look at a map, courtesy of Google Maps, in order to have some sense of where this place Keilah is. The Da'at Mikra edition, edited by Professor Keel, says that Keilah is actually an ancient Canaanite city mentioned in non-Jewish ancient sources as well. It was a known community. In Yoshua chapter 15, we find Keilah as one of the cities assigned to Yehuda when they enter Israel, although it's not clear to me whether that's a site of a future city or it's an existing city at that point. There is a Malbim, I have to admit, in our chapter, in chapter 23, sentence 3, who says Keilah is not actually from the tribe of Yehuda. I have no idea where he gets this, and Radak explicitly says it's not true. Radak explicitly says Keilah is from Yehuda, and I think all indications, like that passage in Yehoshua chapter 15, are that it is. I don't know where Malbim invented that from. He doesn't say. Further, in Nehemiah chapter 3, some of you learned Ezra and Nehemiah with me. So in Nehemiah chapter 3, he talks about the project of building the wall of Jerusalem in the beginning of the Second Temple. And the way they did it was, each section of the wall was sponsored by a community. So there's a section of the wall that's sponsored by Keilah, which again shows that it's likely in Yehuda, because that's where those communities were, I think. So Google Maps identifies an archaeological site in Yehuda called Chirbet Keilah. You see it on your map in source number 1, right there in the middle. Not that far from Adulam. That's why I chose this level of magnification, was because it would show you both. If you look northwest of Keilah, you see Adulam Grove Nature Reserve. If you go further in, if you were to go more locally, you would see caves of Adulam and all that. Also, you can see the community of Nechusha. I have friends in Nechusha. You can see other places that you might recognize, the place with the Battle of the Lamed Hay. You can see Neve Michael. I think many of you are familiar with that. Off to the southeast, you see Hebron, or as they call it, Hebron University, Palestine. So, sorry? Oh, nice map. Hold on, Susan, just keep that up for 1 second. I'm going to spotlight you so that there will be, for everybody, it'll be much more magnified. Okay. I'm looking. Underlined? You underlined? I don't actually see what you underlined.
Here's Keilah.
Interesting. That's further west than I would have expected, where they're putting it. Maybe not.
They're putting it very close on top. After the on top of it is that's
Guvrin? Beit Guvrin. Sorry, is it near Beit Guvrin?
Yes, that's it.
That makes sense.
Yes.
Okay.
Beit Guvrin is just a bit up there was north. Right?
Okay.
North.
Yeah. Thank you. So for anyone who wants to go back to seeing everybody now, you can still watch Susan if you like, but if you want to go back to seeing everybody, if you go to the View button in your upper right and choose Gallery, you'll be able to see everybody again.
I can send you the map if you'd like.
Oh, that's all right. Thank you. I mean, if you want to, then I can circulate it, I guess. But also people can look for Chirbet Keilah on Google Maps and make their own maps. Okay. The reason, or one reason why I stress this location, besides the general orientation, which I think is valuable, and knowledge of Eretz Yisrael, which I think is valuable, is also because this is pretty far east within the land. It's far from traditional Philistine territory. Remember the Philistine cities, Ekron, Ashdod, Ashkelon, Gath, Aza, right? This is way east of those. The Philistines are making serious inroads in the land of Israel, and Shaul is not stopping them. And I think that's something that should give us pause because of what's going to happen when the story starts. Take a look at chapter 23, sentence 1. Something's going to jump out at you. Vayagidu leDavid leMor. They told David, Hine Philistim nilchamim b'Keilah v'hema shosim es hagaranos. The Plishtim are fighting against Keilah and they are plundering the granaries. They are raiding the granaries. What jumps out at you from that sentence? Yes, Benita.
So David is now in the role of a leader?
Yeah. What happened to Shaul? People are coming to David and saying to David, we have a problem, the Plishtim are attacking. Now it's true, David is a decorated war hero, right? We know, everybody's been praising David ever since he killed Goliath. I get it. Nonetheless, something is wrong with this picture. And that goes back to my question of Shaul's identity at this point in our story and something to keep in mind as we go through this. So let's take a look. Sentence two. For those who haven't been here in a while, which is to say everybody, I'm just going to remind everybody of what we did the last few weeks before break, which is I'm going to go through a section and then open it for question and comment, as opposed to doing the questions all along. I the feedback I got on that was that that was a good move. So we're going to stick to that. So I'm going to mute everybody by default. And we're gonna go see the psukim. Let's see the sentences. Pasuk bet, sentence two. Vayishal David b'Hashem lemor. David inquired of God, saying, Ha'elech v'hikesi b'plishtim ha'ele. Shall I go strike these plishtim? Vayomer Hashem el David. Lech v'hikisa b'plishtim. Hashem says, go strike the plishtim. V'hoshata es ki'ila, and save ki'ila. Vayomru anshe David elav, sentence three, David's men said to him, I don't know about this. Hine anachnu fo b'Yehuda yireim. You know, we are afraid here in Yehuda. Meaning, as the commentators note, we are here in the tribe of Yehuda, among your own allies. And yet we are afraid of Shaul already. We have an enemy. We don't need to make new enemies. Now we're going to go fight the Plishtim as well. We don't need more enemies. So Pasuk Dalet, sentence four. By Yosef O David Lishol Bashem. David asks of God again. Vayaneu Hashem, and Hashem answered him. Vayomer kum reit ki'ila. Hashem said, go down to Ki'ilah. I'm going to give the Plishtim to you. Stop panicking. David and his men go to Ki'ilah, and they fight the Plishtim. And they get their cattle. And he strikes them a mighty blow. Vayosha David ace Yoshve Ki'ilah, and David saved Yoshve Ki'ilah, and only then are we told about Pasuk Vav. Vayihi Vivroach Abyasar ben Achimelech al David Ki'ilah, when Abyasar had fled to David, to Ki'ilah apparently, Ephod Yarad Biyado. He had the Ephod. The Ephod, the breastplate, well, the vest, but with it, the breastplate, the Urim Betumim, which is how David inquired of God in the beginning of the story. Now, there's a lot to unpack here. Let's get started on it. So first of all, the general understanding of commentators is that when David inquires of God in sentence two, it is indeed via the Urim Betumim. You may remember that back in chapter 22, sentence 15, when Achimelech was defending himself to Shaul. And he said, yes, I asked of David. We had two different ways. I asked of God for David. We had two ways to read that sentence. And the majority approach to that sentence was that what Achimelech said was, this isn't the first time I've asked the Urim Betumim for David. That's standard protocol. Why are you getting angry at me for inquiring of the Urim Betumim? I always do that for David. And fitting with that, that's what David is doing now here. David is inquiring of the Urim Betumim. He's an old hand at this. He's experienced, and he's going to continue to do it. We'll see this happen again and again. David is going to do it in chapter 30. David is going to do it in Shmuel Bet chapter 2, chapter 5. This is what David does. He inquires of Hashem, and we saw this. Abarbanel and Malbim in Shmuel Bet make the point that David is somebody who is always relying on Hashem's guidance. He is a person of emunah. He's a person of faith. I need to know what to do next. Let me ask Hashem, and Hashem will tell me. That's the way David operates. And I gave you, if you take a look at source number two, I gave you a contrast. before you look it up, the chapter 14, sentences 18 to 19, that was in a war against the Plishtim. Shaul is leading everybody against the Plishtim. Before you look it up, anybody remember what happens there? Relates to the Urim Batumim. I don't blame you, I wouldn't have remembered.
I think the Urim and Thummim come into it, but I think it's afterwards, after they lose, that they want to figure out who's at fault. Is that
right.
Where it was?
So you're close. That's later in the chapter. Take a look back. That's later in the chapter when they have problems and they find out Yonatan ate. Or at least that's what it looks like. But before that, this is when the Plishtim are on the run. So chapter 14, sentences 18 and 19, Shaul says, Hagisha Aron HaElokim, bring the Aron, ki haya Aron HaElokim b'yamahu ubnei Yisrael, the Aron was there. Vayhi ad diber Shaul HaKohen, Shaul is speaking to the Kohen, he wants to inquire of the Urim V'Tumim, should we pursue the Plishtim, we are routing them. V'hahamon asher machane Plishtim, vayelech halokh varav, vayomer Shaul HaKohen esof yadecha. The Plishtim are all confused. The Plishtim are scared. They are routed. And Shaul says to the Kohen, you know what? Don't bother asking the Urim Bitumen. I have a better idea. We're just going to go attack the Plishtim. So in contrast, David, every step of the way, turns to Hashem and asks, what am I supposed to do? Shaul, on the other hand, sees an opportunity and says, forget that. We'll call you later. The very different approaches here between the two of them. So David's men are not made of the same material as David, right? David's men are afraid of Shaul and are not interested in taking on the Plishtim as well. And they don't accept the answer of the Urim V'Tumim, which is kind of surprising. I would have expected them to listen to the Urim V'Tumim. They're going to listen the second time. So one approach is to say that this is just their general fear, right? They're afraid of Shaul and they don't need more enemies. That's one approach. However, Ralbag says, not so fast. Take a look back in our chapter 23 and look at the response that David got to his first question. Okay, chapter 23, sentence 4. Hashem says, get up, descend to Keilah, right? I am giving the plea, I'm sorry, that's the second time. Chapter 23, sentence 2. He says, Lech v'kisa v'plishtim, go fight the plishtim, v'hoshata es Keilah, and save Keilah. Versus the second response in sentence 4, go descend to Keilah, I'm going to give the Plishtim into your hands. What's the difference? You can unmute. What's the difference between Hashem's response number 1 and response number 2?
Like in number 2, he's responding to the concerns of David's, of the people.
Yeah.
Who are saying, we're scared. So he's saying, don't worry, I'll give them in your hands. That wasn't what David asked.
Well, David's question doesn't necessarily change because we don't get the wording the second time. But the response changes. The first time around, there was no promise of success. You go save them. They didn't say it's actually going to work. So Ralbag says they must have learned the end of Shoftim recently. The story of Pelegesh B'Giv'ah. Remember that story? The tribes are assembled to fight against Binyamin, and they ask the Urim V'Tumim, should we do it? And the Urim V'Tumim says, rah, rah, go to it. And they lose the battle twice. And there are different explanations as to why, right? Ramban says because they were wrong, but there's more to it than that. But take a look at what Ralbag says. He says in source number 3, V'yitachen shenomar, we could say, V'hu anachon l'fi masha achshov, and he says, I think this is the right answer. In case you weren't sure, he says, "Ki alashon harishon hu misupak." The first response that Hashem used was uncertain, meaning it wasn't clear. Ukvar ashar sheyuvan shimilech v'ikaba plishtim hine yoshia es kila lo bezul hazeh. It could be understood that he's saying, "Go fight the plishtim because you're not going to defeat them unless you do." Aval lo yeh bezeh ma'amar haftachah sheyakeh es haplishtim, but he didn't promise that he's going to actually win. And that's why they were afraid to go down to Keilah. Hello to Ebenyan Pilegesh Begivah, Mashakarali Yisrael Mehara. Think of the Pilegesh Begivah story, where in fact they lost twice. So they said, you know, we are not confident. You didn't promise us any miracles. So says Rabag. Malbim brings this idea as well. And that explains why they'll accept the second answer, because the second answer says, I'm going to help you win. Malbim gives us an even finer read. This is for the grammarians, so you know who you are. If you take a look more closely in sentence 2, he says, Vihikisa baplishtim. Whereas in Pasuk Dalet, he says, Vihikisa, where was it? Sorry. Keninosein es plishtim biyadecha. There is baplishtim and there is es plishtim. I'm sorry, I'm missing what I wanted to show here. There was something else I wanted to show. No, that's good enough for now. It's going to come up in another way, but this is okay. Take a look at source number 4, what Malbim says. I'm going to read in my English translation rather than do it with the Hebrew because it's already complicated enough. There is a difference with the verb makeh, to strike, regarding military conquest, when it is connected with bit, vikisa baplishtim, or with et. Had it said, you will strike et plishtim, et the Philistines, that would have meant he would strike all of them, as makeh et always teaches, and it gives you a reference in Bereishis. But makeh bo teaches that he would only kill some of them. David asked, will I strike Ba, the Philistines, meaning some of them? David didn't ask about fighting off all the Plishtim. David asked about fighting off the Plishtim who had come to attack Keilah, but that would leave some of them alive. And Hashem said, yeah, you'll strike that partial group and you'll save Keilah. So the people are still concerned. That leaves a whole lot of Philistines to come attack us again. We're not interested in that. That's what bothers them as Malbim reads it. And we'll see that fit very interestingly in a Gemara in Erevin that we may get to today, may have to wait till next time. But that's Malbim's ear for language. Malbim loves language. And he makes generalizations which work for, like, I don't know, some large percentage of the cases, even if they don't fit with all of the cases. Meaning, you can come up with cases of nakebo, and it sounds like it does mean everybody and not just some. Nonetheless, this is what Malbim does. So the men are afraid. So David goes back to ask Hashem again. And this answer addresses the concerns and says, don't worry about it, there'll be a miracle and all of that. And David's men fight the Plishtim, take their cattle, and defeat them. How did you get their cattle? By fighting them, by fighting a war with them. What, were their cattle at the battle? Which rhymes nicely, by the way. What is that about? So, Professor Keel in the Dot Mikra edition suggests that you look back at what the Plishtim were there to do. The Plishtim were raiding the granary. So if you're raiding the granary, you have to bring animals in order to be able to carry off whatever you're raiding. So that's Professor Keel's response. He says that the Plishtim brought their animals in order to get the grain from Keilah. Radak says no. The point is that David and his men struck all of the Plishtim. They went all the way to the Plishti cities in the west. They didn't just get the ones who were attacking Keilah. They went all the way back to those cities. It's a little bit odd because of the order in the sentence. This is sentence 5. It actually mentions taking the cattle before it mentions striking a mighty blow against them, which, you know, is a little bit strange. But maybe the answer is they went to get the cattle first because they need it. They're living out there in the wilderness. Professor Keel points that out. So maybe that's exactly what they did. Unclear. But then you get sentence 6. And sentence 6 requires some discussion. I'm going to ask you this question. In sentence 2, we were told, that David inquired of God. It's only in sentence 6 that we are told that Abiasa brought the ephod. Why didn't you give me this information before? Abiasar arrived at the end of chapter 22. Why are you waiting until here in order to tell me that? Does that make any sense? What would you do with that?
Maybe David was just speaking with God. Maybe it was before he had the Urim and Thummim.
Right. So you could suggest that he actually didn't use the Urim v'Tumim in the beginning. Maybe not. It's not the approach in general of the commentators, I have to say. The commentators all say this is with the Urim v'Tumim, but it would solve the problem of why it's not mentioned there. I would further highlight a problem, Linda, with that approach, and this may be why the commentators all assume it's the Urim v'Tumim. Abiasar didn't arrive after the attack. Abiasar arrived back in chapter 22. So why wouldn't he have used the Urim v'Tumim? He has it at his disposal. It's really strange. Janine?
Well, sorry. I was going to say it explains in the meantime. You know, this is just explaining why, but again, it comes after the Urim.
Yeah, the whole thing is very strange. So I'm going to tackle this by first addressing other questions and then coming back to it. First question really is the language itself with Abiasar. If you look at sentence 6, it said, when Abiasar ben Achimelech came to David Keilah, the ephod descended with him. It doesn't say he brought the ephod. It just descended. So Radak picks up on that in source number 5. I'm just going to say it outside because it's already 227. But Radak says, the ephod comes in without him having intended it. He just grabbed stuff and threw it in a bag and came down there. He didn't even think about the fact that he had the Urim v'Tumim. I find this a little bit questionable. This isn't just like an extra can opener. You know? Like, this is, first of all, it's big. It's not a small object. And second, they kept the ephod in the Mishkan, like, we know, like, with the big day kahuna, with the special clothing of the Kohen Gadol, who is, by the way, his father, who was murdered. Like, I just happened to pick up the Urim v'Tumim? I don't have an answer for this. I just think that that's a bizarre statement. That's number one. Unless the answer is to say, unlike what Radak says in the end, that what it really means is, he brought it intentionally, but this was Hashem's plan. It wasn't about Abiasar deciding to do it. It was God deciding to do it. So along the lines of Radak, but not quite the same. Second point. I'm sorry, Ricky. The second point.
Did he go south with him?
Ricky, I'm going further. The second problem is, the Pasuk says that Abiasar came to Keilah. Did Abiasar really come to Keilah? No. In the end of chapter 22, Abiasar came earlier, as Susan said. He came to Ya'ar Cheret. He didn't come to Keilah. So that could suggest that the story of Abiasar's arrival was brought back in the previous chapter, in chapter 22, in order to connect it with the destruction of Nov and David's apology and his commitment to protect them and all of that. But maybe it really happened afterwards, when David was out of Ya'ar Cheret and in the area of Keilah. It could be it actually happened later. This isn't the first time in Shmuel that we've seen a story out of order. And indeed, Mitzudah says, David was in the area of Keilah already when he arrived. But Malbin says, different idea. Playing into the idea that this is all about Hashem wanting to save Keilah, the statement of Malbim in source number 6 is that when it says he came Keilah, it means he came to save Keilah. That Hashem arranged this in order to save the people of Keilah. That's why it has to be there. But that brings us back to our question, which is, again, why mention this here and not in the beginning of the chapter? the what exactly is this about? So the commentators all say that this is here in order to show, you know, how David inquires of God, that it's via the Urim V'Tumim. But Rav Bazak says something here as well. And he says, the ephod in the next story is going to save David. The next story coming up in our chapter is when Shaul wants to come to Keilah. And David is going to ask the ephod, is Keilah going to turn me over to Shaul? And God says, you bet. That's what that's the answer of the ephod is. Yes, Keilah is going to betray you. And so we bring the story of the ephod here, and I see it's already 2:30, so I'm going to restart with this next time. I'm going to say it fast now, but restart it with it next time. The point is to show that destroying Nov actually harmed Shaul rather than help him. By destroying Nov, he gives David the Urim V'Tumim. And that will enable David to escape from him. Hashem is planning this every step of the way. And that which Shaul thought he was doing in his own interest ends up sabotaging him. And that's why it's mentioned later when it actually sabotages him. There is more to say here. So we're going to come back to this, God willing, next Thursday. It's great to be back learning again. I missed it for the last couple of weeks. And looking forward to continuing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.